edition of a very special edition of the NerdWatch podcast. I, of course, am G Money, and we are here on a very special evening because I brought my NerdWatch order with me. We're going to be talking a very special edition of wrestling because we said that we're going to do this every pay-per-view. Well, pay-per-view just passed. We're going to talk about the state of wrestling, and we're going to talk about there's a lot of wrestling content available through mainstream channels right now, so we'll talk a little bit about that right now as well. But before we do begin, let me introduce the crew. It is a trio of talent. First off, joining us all the way from the Big Island, she is an encyclopedia of wrestling knowledge. And please say hello, everyone, to Angie, who's in the house tonight. How's it going, Angie?
I'm good. Thank you.
Also, as you can tell, a Brian Pillman fan here tonight as well, so very cool. Anyway, I'm so glad you can make it, Andrew. We're going to talk a lot about what the state of wrestling is. I'm super excited, and I got to tell you, unfortunately for you, there is someone else here.
What?
Yeah, I said trio. I don't know how you feel about this next guy. I've known this guy for quite some time. He was on our last WrestleMania podcast. He is also a super fan, and we've known him for quite some time. I know Andy's not the biggest fan, but she'll get over it. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Mitchell, who's in the house tonight.
What's up, everybody?
How's it going, Mitch? You doing,
doing good?
All
right,
excellent.
Thrones in the chat, man.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try and do our best to keep this succinct and keep it as on point as possible. So first off, what we want to do is, just like we did the WrestleMania podcast, let's get a little bit caught up in the world of wrestling. The biggest we just passed the biggest pay-per-view of the month, which was WrestleMania Backlash. So let's get started right there. First off, we don't have to get into every single match. Let's just talk about the highlights of the show. I'm going to make a comment first. I hope that this name never gets used again. I think it's stupid. I don't like it. Just call it Backlash, okay? I don't know if they're trying to bring in new people from Peacock or for Peacock. Don't like it. So I'm not digging it at all, but that's okay. That's just my personal opinion. Just leave WrestleMania out of it and just call it Backlash. Some of the highlights for you guys when it comes to Backlash. Of course, as we know, this is kind of we as wrestling fans think that WrestleMania is kind of the end of all the storylines. Everything gets wrapped up and we start a new season or year of wrestling. Well, that's not the case anymore. It kind of keeps going after Backlash, or kind of keeps going after WrestleMania into Backlash. So, Angie, for you, what were the highlights of the show for you?
As a fan of Bayley, I was glad to see Bayley get a match. Someone who did not have anything really to do in WrestleMania.
Nothing.
Except to host and give some good jokes and vignettes here and there, which I thought was a shame because she was one of the biggest superstars of the Thunderdome era, one of the hardest working females in the Thunderdome era, and I've always loved Bayley. She's always been my number one in the four horsewomen of NXT, so I was glad to see her shine there. I was interested, and I know this was a pre-show match, but I was interested to see Ricochet get to do a little bit something with Sheamus. Ricochet, somebody that's kind of been missing in action, so to speak.
Yeah.
I know some of the backstage stuff has made him kind of unpopular with fans.
Yep.
I get it, I do, but I'm always happy to see talent that isn't used as much kind of get opportunities, and you can't really deny that he is a very talented performer. Now, if they had my main man Mustafa Ali there, then I'd be the happiest, but it was what it was. And I think we're going to probably talk about this later, but I was baffled by a couple of different choices.
Sure.
First off, the Raw Women's Triple Threat, which had Rhea Ripley, Asuka, and Charlotte Flair, and also the, I was going to say John Morrison because he was a featured part, but the Miz and Damian Priest match, which was, again, I see your face. I already knew going in, this is probably something we're going to discuss.
Oh, yeah.
But it was watching it and watching that pay-per-view, I was, as you know, because I get drunk a lot, I was drinking while I was watching it. Sure. And I was like, did I miss something? Did I suddenly start drinking LSD? What is happening? Like, did they announce this and I just blacked out? It's very interesting what went on there. You know, there were a lot of rehashes from WrestleMania. I think, of course, the big feel good moment of WrestleMania Backlash was the tag team title win of Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio.
Yeah.
Which I liked. I'm a sucker for family kind of stuff, as you know, fan of Brian Pillman, and as such, fan of Brian Pillman Jr. So I like that father-son kind of tag team thing. I think it's really cool, and it's a shame that we don't get to see that more in wrestling, but of course, with how certain wrestlers live, it's difficult for them to perform for quite that long, so I understand it. But I liked it overall. I understood why it was called WrestleMania Backlash, because I think a lot of the things that they maybe had wanted to try and do at WrestleMania, they couldn't do, and especially because of the matches they chose to do at WrestleMania that they felt maybe would appeal to more crowd, and so they made that WrestleMania, and then had WrestleMania Backlash as sort of like a, this is what we really wanted to do, but this was our crowd appeasement sort of deal.
That's what
it kind of felt like, and that's why I understood why they called it WrestleMania Backlash, but it was kind of, it felt kind of a bummer because it wasn't as big as WrestleMania and as big as what that name sort of has come to mean or come to entail, so it kind of felt like a little bit of a deflation. I understood it, but if it was just called Backlash, it would have felt more satisfying. Agreed.
What about you? What were your highlights there, Mitch, for Backlash?
I can tell you it wasn't the zombies, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know what's funny? It's so funny you mentioned that, because it's, you know, you can't, the wrestlers in WWE can't say that Blood and Guts set the wrestling industry back 30 years when you decide to put up a zombie match. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on. You know,
Netflix paid for that. So they paid a lot of money for that.
I'm sure Batista was very much behind that. As a wrestling fan, it wasn't entertaining. It was just stupid. But anyway, Mitch, go ahead. Enough with my feelings.
Hey, best match of the night was the main event. Actually, Roman Reigns beat somebody without any interference. The Usos did not. I mean, Jay was nowhere to be found. Cesaro was actually pretty good in that match. But again, you need to acknowledge him. He is the reigning, defending SmackDown Universal Champion, the best champion in the world today. Somebody, if you don't agree with me, let me know now. I know you can't say that for Lashley.
You know what sucks?
Well, actually, I gotta agree with you, and I hate to give Mitchell credit where credit's due, but he's right, and not to discount Cesaro because he is a great talent, and not to actually, yeah, to totally cut into Mitchell's time, but I really do think that Roman Reigns has done a lot with the position he's in and has made moments for a lot of people he's come up against. So I got nothing but respect for it, but I don't know if I have respect for Mitchell yet, but definitely Roman Reigns. And I think especially as the three of us live in Hawaii, we're Polynesian wrestling fans.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us have really had, and I can't speak for everyone, but I don't think any of us have had that moment where we've disliked Roman Reigns, because I think we felt that kinship from one Polynesian to another. I know I have. Sure. I've never had a moment where I've been like, Roman Reigns sucks, I hate him. I maybe didn't understand what he was doing, but I've never actively rooted against him. So
Well,
I acknowledged him way before Mitchell.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because what's funny is that, number one, I hate to see Roman's reign, no pun intended, continue at the expense of Cesaro. But, I mean, I really wish that Cesaro would actually get a shot. I mean, like a serious run, because I think he could do it. I mean, I could be wrong, but, you know, give him a chance. But at least they gave him a WrestleMania moment. They gave him sure. he was the main event at Backlash, which I completely get. I will say I do have one criticism of Roman. And it's not his fault. It's probably more promotion's fault. I cannot stand the moniker of head of the table. Don't like it. I think it's stupid. I think what's more resonant for someone like Roman is tribal chief. That is what needs to be put on shirts with the lay around it. Okay, acknowledge me is great. Head of the table is a terrible moniker. They need to get rid of that. It is stupid. For me, when I think about it, there's no essence of Polynesian behind it. And with tribal chief, there is, and it makes him sound like he's in charge. I like that a lot. Go ahead.
I agree with you, and not to cut in, but I think, and I don't know if Mitchell would be saying the same thing as me, but I think the problem with that is that it is so Polynesian.
Yeah, maybe.
While we love it,
yeah,
as people that live in Polynesia, that live in that culture, yeah, and we identify as that, we love it and we feel very represented and seen by it. I think other people would be touchy about it or have a problem with it, and I think other people might consider it the very sort of a popular, I think, term these days is cultural appropriation of
even for having, a Samoan, you think
that,
so?
Having that sort of imagery. Well, no, I don't think I think other people might consider it cultural appropriation. Fair. To have it spread to the masses that, and being like, oh, tribal chief, anyone can wear that tribal chief shirt and all that kind of stuff, which, I mean, they can. On a personal level, I think less sensitive of that sort of thing.
Sure.
Maybe it's because I've grew up in Hawaii and all of our culture is very tourist culture.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's just my own personal experience there, but I think they probably were concerned about it being insensitive or inappropriate.
That's fair.
That's the only reason why, I think. Sorry to cut you off.
No,
I don't know if Mitchell was going to say the same thing, but yeah.
I have to agree, to be honest, but doesn't this set up... How do you have Roman Reigns lose to somebody that's not Polynesian? Like, does this set up some... With The Rock, you can see small bites that Paul Heyman's already on social media about he's the best Polynesian wrestler, better than The Rock. I mean, this is starting to set up The Rock's return. Now, Roman has a jacket. I don't know if you've seen the pictures. Roman now has a jacket, the same thing like The Rock when he came back in 2011. There's a lot of things setting itself up, because I don't think it's going to be Brock and Roman again, because I think Brock's gonna deal with Lashley here in a couple of months, but it might just be The Rock and Roman. I mean, how do you top him being the head of the table when he can defeat the ultimate Polynesian wrestler, which is The Rock?
Right,
and that was the rumor, though, wasn't it? At WrestleMania Hollywood, that was what they were kind of gearing towards, and now that it's deferred by like a year, they probably have to fill it a little bit longer. But I thought that was ultimately the goal, right? With specifically WrestleMania Hollywood, which is supposed to be this coming year.
It's just, why wouldn't you do it in the biggest spectacular in Texas?
The reason why you don't do that because now the onus is on Roman to beat Rock in his hometown of Hollywood. That's what he owns, Hollywood. That's the point of them waiting on it, because there's no heat There's no heat for The Rock in Texas, and I don't mean that negatively. I mean there's just no heat for that match. If he's in Hollywood and he's got, let's say The Rock shows up for in 2 years from now for Hollywood WrestleMania, right? And he brings with him his entourage of actor and superstar friends, right, from Hollywood. He could be the total heel if he wanted to be, because he could be the guy, I mean, not heel, but he could be the face, because Roman's going to be the heel because he's going to have to beat Rock down. Unless they turn him in a year and a half, which I hope they don't, to be quite honest with you.
Do you give him another year and a half as champ? I mean, that hasn't been done in a long time. People hold titles for 2 years.
He is the tribal chief.
I think that's why they do it.
I wouldn't mind they do it, because every week Roman is something different. I mean, can they keep it up where they're not reusing stuff? I mean, he's beaten Cesaro. I mean, you can line guys up to face Roman, but I mean, if he loses if you wait until WrestleMania Hollywood, that's almost 2 years that you have to line him up with people that in the end they're going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be like, that. But that's what Vince likes. Right, Vince needs to set up a dominant. He needs to set up a dominant character. Right. And that's going to be Roman.
I understand that, Kurt, completely. But that means you don't put your younger up-and-coming NXT stars in SmackDown. You're not going to put Adam Cole to go against Roman Reigns and just have him lose. That's not what's going to happen. That means what you're going to do is set up your more established stars to go against Roman for the next year and a half. And right. Your new stars will go to Raw to build until this whole Rock-Roman thing conclude. And then whatever happens there, happens there.
Right. And like I said, we know that Rock's going to take the proverbial, you know, he's going to be looking up at the lights for sure. That's kind of the point. So just to establish Roman as he is now completely over. But I mean, ultimately though, you know, considering what Backlash could have been, this also sets up for what's coming next. And that of course is Hell in a Cell. Now, Hell in a Cell.
Come on, you gotta say it right. Hell in a Cell.
I appreciate that. Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell is always, most of the time, is a decent pay-per-view. We've had some stinkers, no doubt about it. But I mean, the ladies have brought it in Hell in a Cell. You know, Becky and Sasha, and the like, and of course, Charlotte Flair. By the way, deja vu. Charlotte is in Hell in a Cell again. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, it's rough for me to think, like, you know, I know that she is that women's division. I get it. You know what I mean? I don't know. If we're not at least going through other talent, it seems like there's so much, and this is the same problem that AEW is now running into, which we'll get into later. There is so much talent that they are not using that sits in the back and does nothing, and they never get anything. And then what happens is that we're stuck with the same guys all the time. So we're never in, there's never, and what's sad is that I don't understand why you can't, especially in the day and age of wrestling now, why can't you put people into rotation? You know what I mean? As fast as stars are made and as fast as stars die, why can't we get people in some kind of rotation? You know what I mean? We don't, and that's the thing, is that you can have one long establishing star like Roman, one long establishing star like Charlotte, right? That's fine, but let's put them up against other people. Let's give an opportunity for those that can possibly make that time usable, not only to get themselves over, but get your other talent over. But anyway, I defer to you, Angie. What do you think? What's the deal? Now we've got Hell in a Cell on the way, particularly about the women's division. What is going on?
Okay, first off, I'm very confused as to why Hell in a Cell is now in the middle of the year.
Yep.
as opposed to their usual sort of October time to kind of go with the spooky theme of Halloween and everything.
Yep.
I thought it was a very interesting choice, and I would be curious to know why they made that switch, because I know usually going into June, isn't it Money in the Bank usually?
It normally is like Money in the Bank.
In the last like 10 years or so,
it's right. been Money in the Bank.
July. He's right. You're right. July.
And it's a live crowd. It's in Texas, so they're going to go.
That's probably why.
They're going to go live crowd. So that weekend is SmackDown live crowd, Money in the Bank live crowd, and Raw live crowd. So that's when they go back to live crowd.
What's interesting about Hell in a Cell not being in front of a live crowd is that I don't think it has the same resonance as
pull.
It doesn't have the same resonance as a crowd watching the Hell in a Cell. So
yes,
I think that's a problem. And I think once again, and like I said, I could be completely wrong about this, but what I think is happening is that I think that they're changing it up because of the transfer from WWE Network to Peacock in the States. They want people more invested in the WWE Network and tell them that they're there, give them something more interesting to look at. That's why they called it WrestleMania Backlash. You know, so mm-hmm. Hell in a Cell is a big thing. And for those that haven't watched in a while, they know Hell in a Cell. If they watched when they were younger or 10, 15 years ago, they know what Hell in a Cell is all about and things of that nature. So, you know, I get it, I guess, but it is throwing me off a bit from the wrestling quote-unquote season. So I'm with Angie on that. Yeah, it's really throwing me off.
And as far as the women's division goes, I have to agree with you, especially in the case of the women's division. I feel like there should be seasonal stars. Though they have so many women's talent. They have so many people, especially down in NXT. I mean, in NXT, they had to create women's tag team titles.
Yeah.
Aside from the regular women's tag team titles that, I guess, dwell now only on the main roster.
Right.
Which I guess I understand.
With that too.
Oh, yeah? I didn't hear
with
it.
With another belt that's coming back, probably.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant specifically as to why they have women's tag titles for
because NXT has more women wrestlers that they want to use, so they have to incorporate women's tag team titles, because I mean Natty and Tamina can do it. They can go to all three brands and wrestle, but I think that's too much. They'll be on every week, Monday, Tuesday, Friday. So having a separate women's tag team title, actually, you can use more women wrestlers in NXT.
Yes.
Right? That kind of stuff.
I agree. No, but I agree with that 100%, because there are so many women in NXT that they can use and center a program on, both for the main title as well as the tag titles. And that's not even going into NXT UK. And it is a little disheartening. As you know, I'm a very big fan of Asuka, to see her do so much work during the pandemic as the women's champ, especially after she got the title at Money in the Bank from Becky Lynch.
Yep.
And for her to almost have to take a backseat to a lot of other female talent on Raw, on her brand, where she was champion. And it made me very sad, because I get wanting to push new talent. I get you have this sort of lightning in a bottle talent with Rhea Ripley, and you want to push her, you want to promote her, because her ceiling is limitless. Like she has no ceiling.
Nope.
You know, she's very talented, and she's also still so young.
Yep.
So I get wanting to try and strap the rocket to her and see how far she can take the women's division, especially because Asuka and Charlotte Flair and a lot of other talent are older. They're by no means, you know, on their way out, so to speak, but they have more matches behind them than Rhea does.
Sure.
So I get that, and I get wanting to bet on youth and the future and all that. But when it comes at the expense of the talent that's been there that whole time, it's just really disheartening. And especially, I think we talked about it when we talked about the WWE releases, but when you look at people like Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, who were there as a tag team for so long as the Iconics, and they grinded and they worked and they tried every way to get over, and then they got broken up, and then Peyton Royce got teamed with, I think, Lacey Evans for a while, and then kind of had a, hey, either use me or let me go, and they let her go. And then Billy Kay finally was starting to get her backstage gimmick of handing out resumes over, and they cut her. And yeah, I get it. You know, pandemic times, you're not making live audience money, right, with tickets or whatever. But you have all of this women's talent that you at one point bet on. But if you're gonna lose interest so fast, and if you're gonna pull back your investment from a lot of these talents so quickly, then it's really a bummer to all the people that go in. You know, there's some that they've been able to, like I said, with Ripley, get lightning in a bottle with, but for the ones that they don't see the lightning in the bottle that is there, man, it breaks my heart, because, you know, as a female wrestling fan in general, there's already so few females that make it to the WWE and achieve those Trish Stratus-like heights or Charlotte Flair-like heights, or for me, Luna Vachon, because I loved Luna. And to see people so easily get cut off at the knees, man, yeah. it's such a bummer.
Well, you know, I do want to send a shout-out to both Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, a.k.a. Jessica McKay. They have a new podcast called Offer Chops. I listened to the first episode. It's very funny, and they're very good together. I don't understand. After listening to that once again, I don't understand why that magic could not have been just kept together, because they are very fun together, and they make a great tag team. No, they're not. So you know what? I will admit, maybe they're not solo stars, but together they're a great women's tag
team. They're magic,
right? They're magic, yeah. Together. That's kind of the point. Okay, yes, let we can criticize their wrestling prowess. We can say whatever we want to say. We get that. I understand that. As a wrestling aficionado, I get it. But the thing is that we also have to come to the conclusion that there are some people in this business that are there to be entertaining. And those two are incredibly entertaining. And yeah, if any indication, if I could just send a shout out to both of those ladies, their new podcast is great. It's very fun. And by the way, Jessica McKay gave away a little secret on that show that a lot of people don't know. She's married. So that was a new one. Apparently, she was getting a lot of emails about how, hey, listen, I'm single. How can I shoot my shot? And she's like, she doesn't like to talk about it, but she's married, and she keeps it very private. But she let that go on the podcast. So yeah,
break my heart. And that was my chance. Anyway. I love her so much. Yeah. She's you know, as a person who is a performer, does theater and stuff, you know, I had nothing but respect for her.
Yeah.
She did everything that she could when they didn't give her anything.
Yeah.
She was like, okay, well, I've got to find something for myself. And she
went
out there and did it.
Yep.
And she allowed herself in a lot of times to be the butt of jokes. She allowed herself to be goofy and to be laughed at, because she just cared that much about being entertaining. I have to respect it.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, giving out, I don't know if it was just her idea or whatever, but giving on her headshots and her resume was freaking brilliant. Was awesome. It totally worked.
It's such an actor thing to do.
Right, because totally she's looking for her next job. And I thought that was awesome. But anyway, Mitch, I want to get you in on this conversation really quick, because you seem to have a problem with the women's division. And her name is Charlotte Flair.
I do. I don't understand why, like how Angie said, you have so much talent in the back that we go around again with Charlotte Flair. Why the Charlotte Flair need to be in championship matches? She should be building younger talent. Like, I mean, hey, put the, you know what? Just put the belt on her. If you're going to put her in the match, have her beat Rhea Ripley. Have her have the belt. Just get it over with. And then now you can have these younger guys, younger women, I'm sorry, chase after her. I mean, if that's what you guys really want and continue to push Charlotte, then just put the belt on her. I mean
go they have did her that.
Collect, right. Have her collect all the belts if you want. Have her go beat Bianca. I mean, go have her beat Raquel. Have her
beat Kaylee Ray. That's the one she hasn't helped.
That's the one she hasn't helped. Now, what's interesting is that that actually poses a very interesting question to both of you. For Charlotte to get over, does she need the belt?
See, if she... Yes.
Ah, you see? Yes. I knew it!
Yes.
I knew there would be...
Because... I knew it. You know why? Because she wants to be different than her dad. Her dad never needed that title to be Ric Flair.
It's true. A good point.
He built, like, if you watched, I watched the what is it, the Iconics, not the women Iconics, they have the series on Peacock.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah, yeah.
Him and Icons. Him and Ricky Steamboat, yeah, Icons. Mm-hmm. Him and Ricky Steamboat, he made Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, 100%.
He saw what Ricky Steamboat could be, and he built him. He knew what Ricky Steamboat was gonna be. So sure. Into You know what it is? Maybe she wants 17 titles so she can say she's better than her dad. That's what it is. It's the number of titles.
Angie, you actually, it seems like you disagree with him. What say you?
I don't think that's her decision.
Good point.
When I hear her talk, and outside of kayfabe, when I hear her give shoot interviews, it seems very much like the company wants to use that Flair name, but also to make it sort of now, how do I
you
put
can't.
This in a
you
kind
can't.
Way?
Time out. You can't. Once you use the name Flair, you can't cut out Rick. You cannot.
No, I don't mean that they want to cut out Rick.
No, they're trying to use Rick as a stepping stone for Charlotte to pass her dad, and that's never going to happen. These diehard wrestling fans will never let that happen.
What do you say, Angie?
Never.
I disagree. I definitely think it's going to happen.
It's not
going to
happen.
Hey,
how can
I
mean, let her finish? Let her finish. I want to know what she has to say.
No, it's fine. Mitchell does this to me all the time. It's fine. I just talk over him.
You just talked for 20 minutes. Come on.
But I don't think it's her decision to keep getting these titles. I think it's the WWE both wanting to be like, look at this next generation star that we have that was kind of more of a homegrown talent, right? Because she didn't really go out there and make her name on the indies, one, and two,
yes,
she's a woman. You know, this is a cheap shot, but I think they're very much taking that women's revolution sort of seriously.
Oh,
and
really?
they want to say the biggest and best and brightest Flair wasn't Rick, was Charlotte. I think
wow.
That's where they're going.
No,
that's interesting.
No,
I don't necessarily agree with it, but I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Now, Mitch, before you chime in, Mitch, I have to say that remembering Charlotte's ascent to stardom, she was not called Flair. She was just Charlotte. Remember, she did, you know, they would, in passing, I remember watching NXT, it was always in passing, like, hey, this is Ric Flair's daughter. But I don't think she wanted to be called Charlotte Flair. I think I remember specifically that her build in NXT was Charlotte,
right.
Charlotte.
But when you put that robe on,
What, well, it's already too late because Vince is. Well, I mean, that's because late, Vince bro. Is already. Vince is already. You know that Vince and everybody in the back is saying we have, in order to put the rocket to her back, is to relate her to her dad. She's gonna have to do everything with her. She's gonna have to do everything her dad did. She's gonna have to wear the robe. She's gonna have to do the strut. She's gonna have to do the woo. And I think that ultimately, I think this run, and maybe I'm wrong. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I think now this run is very different because she's not invoking any of that. I mean, not as of late. I mean, no. You know, she's not invoking any of the Ric Flair mannerisms, right? I mean, literally what's interesting is that this is the byproduct of Lacey Evans getting pregnant and Charlotte losing her spot at Mania. I think really put her on another tier as far as being Charlotte or Charlotte Flair or what have you. Matter of fact, we haven't seen Pops in goodness knows how long,
months.
Right?
Two months.
Yeah, we haven't seen him in 2 months.
You want her to be the best Flair ever? You have her become the belt collector. You want something? Have her become the belt collector. Have her beat. Hey, you guys talk about homegrown. All three women's champions, singles champions, is all homegrown women. Raquel Gonzalez,
yep.
Bianca Belair,
yep.
Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley had an indie career.
Right.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
Right. But once she went to NXT, she went through the roof.
Picture camera. I can't see her face, Mitch.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
That's fine. It was better that way.
Okay, mouth of the deep sound. So
anyway, finish your point, Mitch.
Have her, you know what? You want her to be better than her dad? Have her hold all the titles. That she's at 14 now. She grabs 15, 16, 17, she'll have more.
It's a good title. Point. I guess I can see that point.
Number of titles than her dad. And then you know what? You can put her and her dad on the same, on the equal. I mean, you can't put her above Rick. I'm sorry. I love the whole women's wrestling evolution, everything, but you cannot put her above Rick.
I'm not saying that it's right to do it.
Right.
I'm just saying that seems to be the direction that they're going, especially with how much they push and emphasize, oh, she was the last person to hold the Divas title. She was the first person to hold the newly instated women's title. She held the Raw, the SmackDown, the NXT. She just got the tag titles earlier with Asuka. The only title she hasn't held, and I think it's only because of pandemic time, but the only title she hasn't held is the NXT UK.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
They'll probably put that on Mako anytime, and then
have Charlotte beat her. Right.
Well, here's the interesting thing about this whole question. And Angie, I'm glad you're here because I wanted to direct this more to you. And because what I'm about to say is going to sound like a slight to the women's division, but I don't mean it that way. In the scheme of things, Charlotte winning 17, hell, maybe 18 titles, right? She gets that moniker or she gets that distinction, right? In the scheme of the wrestling business, what does that really mean as far when it comes to the women's championship? And like I said, I want to make sure that everyone knows I don't mean that as a slight to their talent or to the or the women's championship. I'm just saying that when you compare Rick as a, not just, he was an NWA champion. You catch what I'm saying? So I don't want to downplay the women's evolution or the women's contributions in the last few years of the wrestling business. But I mean, if she does win that 17 time, that doesn't remotely even equate her to what her dad did. Am I right about that? Or what's the deal?
No, I agree. I think it's telling that all of her title reigns and all of her significant accomplishments, as of yet,
yeah.
Who knows what the future holds, but as of yet, have been very specifically WWE.
Right.
You know, you look at some people that are her contemporaries. You look at people like Sasha Banks, who used to be Mercedes KV. You look at Asuka, who used to be Kana in Japan. Yep. You look at Io Shirai. You look at a lot of the other people that were women's champions in the WWE.
Right.
Even Bayley, who was Davina Rose. They held titles prior to their time in WWE.
Correct.
And they had made their names also prior to coming to the WWE. And, you know, I have a hard time trying to figure out how much of that Charlotte could have ever controlled because her father's Ric Flair.
Good point.
You know, I don't know how much the WWE would have even allowed, or even her father would have allowed her to go and cut her teeth on the indies if she really wanted to.
Right.
You know, because there was so much money in the daughter of Ric Flair.
Right.
You know, like how there was a lot of money in the son of Ric Flair when his son was alive.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
He's one of those names in wrestling where it would be too difficult for the WWE, or too unlikely for the WWE to let them go anywhere else.
Yeah, it's a good point. And what's funny? It's funny that you mention his brother. It's funny that you mention his brother, because what's interesting is it's something that Charlotte has always said, and maybe we'll wrap up the Charlotte thing with this, is that she always said that when she never had an intention to be in the business, and the only reason why she is doing this is because she wants to live out her brother's dream.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm sure that there has been probably a metamorphosis of that idea, but you know, it's interesting that she has really taken that and run with it. But I mean, if you know, I'm sure that she wants to do this for herself now, but ultimately I do think that they are missing the boat with Hell in a Cell. With specifically, because there are other matches we can talk about after Hell in a Cell is over, because there are setting up a couple of other matches for sure. But this one in particular for me is interesting, because I really don't think there's any money in Charlotte and Rhea Ripley being in that cage unless something really crazy happens in that cage, in that Hell in a Cell match. I don't see the benefit of them both wrestling one another. You could have brought, and listen, I know Rhea's she's the new toy, right? We get that she's the new toy. We understand that Charlotte she's up and coming because she's pissed off that she didn't get her WrestleMania moment for this year. We get that. But I mean, we could have set up something to where Rhea could have looked a little more dominant in the women's division by setting her up with someone that was coming up a bit. You know what I mean? That we could have set something up into the effect of, we could have made Rhea dominant a little more and then maybe push over to Charlotte with them rematching again or something. I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking out loud, but I think that right now between Charlotte and Rhea, I don't know if there's I don't know if there's that tension, that matchup that I think is going to be really impactful, especially now that we're starting to get back into live crowds and it's starting to, you know, we're starting to come out of this pandemic thing. And I don't know. Hey, listen, I'm not the one running a $1 billion company. That's Vince McMahon. So maybe he knows a lot more than I do, but ultimately I think that I'm not excited for it. If more or less, I just don't see it happening. But Hell in a Cell is the next pay-per-view. Do we know when that is? Is it June
8th? I think it's the 12th.
Is it 12th? Okay. So June 12th.
12th or 19th. Is it 20th. Father's Day.
Oh, is it 20th?
It'll take place on June 20th, 2021.
Oh, okay. So Hell in a Cell.
Father's Day.
Okay. And Hell in a Cell 2021. And that is so are there any other, before we move on to the next subject, any other interesting matches that you see coming for Hell in a Cell?
They have Roman Reigns. They don't have a challenger yet. That might be Seth Rollins. I mean, that's coming next. You can tell. Lashley, I think it's Kofi Kingston. Again, they're gonna go around the wagon with that again.
I'm really looking forward to the Nigerian drum match in a cell. That's what I'm looking forward to. So don't get me started. I can't wait for that rematch. Anyway,
they I don't know if you've seen SmackDown's main event this past Friday.
Oh yeah.
Did you see Aleister Black?
Yeah. And speaking of Aleister Black, it looks like Zelina Vega is on her way back.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting. Good for her. I hope that, you know, I really like Zelina. I like what she did. I liked her work. And I think that it's a good idea. I hope that they realize that how talented she is, especially when she's on the mic. Yeah. I hope they understand, especially when it comes to her mic work. I think she's one of the better ones in the women's division. So I really hope they take advantage of that. I think that if you're not going to use her as a wrestler and you're going to use her as a manager, then you need to treat her as such. And I mean that as in if Zelina Vega comes back, I think that Zelina Vega should not be dressing up scantily clad with the cleavage and the short shorts. She should be coming out in pantsuits, and she should be a mouthpiece for these dudes. You know what I mean? That's the kind of respect that she needs if she's going to be a manager, if she's going to reprise that role. I don't know if she is, but I think that if you're not going to use her as a wrestler when she comes back, and we want to put her back in the role where she's managing Garza or Humberto or whatever, treat her as a manager.
She's going to be Lily.
Who the hell knows?
If that happens, I'm going to be so upset. But because I agree with you, G Money, I think definitely, and not to go too far outside of the realm of WWE, but I don't know if either of you are familiar with Selena De La Renta.
Yes,
who did a lot of work in MLW.
MLW.
That was her whole thing.
She just
her
quit. Whole thing with Promociones. She just quit, Dorado. Right?
I know, it broke my heart because I love Selena De La Renta, but she seems to be stoked on possibilities, so whatever. But her whole thing was she was the empresaria. She was the manager of all these wrestlers, and she dressed the part.
Yes.
And she also acted the part as far as, like, all the weird brujeria stuff she did. She was always very business-minded, even 100%. With all these... the mysticism. So I really liked that. And again, I'm fine if you want Zelina Vega to be both, to be a wrestler and a manager, but I think it's very, you need to make the distinction as to when she's wrestler minded,
right,
different
right.
from when she's managerial minded.
100%. 100%. And you know what's interesting, speaking of that, I'm curious if she would ever be interested to coming over to the Performance Center and hanging out with all the guys, De La Renta would be. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious if she'd ever want to step into that realm, because she was doing so well in MLW. It was insane. So I don't know. I just it was kind of a shock that she, and she's got skills too. That's the other thing. So she's really good. There was another subject I wanted to broach, but right before we got onto Zelina Vega, that is what was it? Oh, Eva. Speaking of women, there's a lot of social media criticism of Eva coming in when she did. I will start with you, Mitch. Do you think it's a good idea that she comes back? Do you think this is a resurrection of her character for her? Do you think that this is a evolution, as she calls it? Well, what's your take? With the vignettes that you've seen, you know, we can't judge until she gets back, but do you think this is a good idea?
If she comes back and learned how to wrestle and can wrestle, it'll be fine. If she's going to be like, I don't know if you remember Summer Rae's debut was like one night, and then they changed her character immediately.
Yeah, they did.
Because it didn't work. I don't know. I mean, if she can, like I said, if she comes back and puts her heart into the business and learns it and it's better than the first time around, it'll be fine. But if it's a If it's a dumpster fire like the first time around, she'll be done.
That's the thing they did to Tennille Dashwood too, right? They did that. They built her up, did that one thing for one
Emelina.
Night. Emelina. I was like, oh my gosh, yep. Whatever. But yeah, I don't know, Angie. What do you think? Do you think that there's something here? Hiring her back is she just the face, or do they really see an investment in her?
The timing was poor, of course, as we've discussed.
Amen.
And I think that she got a lot of flack for that. I did have some semblance of respect for her because, as we saw, and of course, Total Divas is very curated, but it did seem like she did want to get better at wrestling. Like, sure. It was, she I think realized that her ceiling was a little bit lower than a lot of other people, but she did at least want to improve, where her matches didn't look so bad.
Sure.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And I always hate calling people bad at this because God knows, you know, I'm fat and out of shape. I couldn't do that kind of shit. So, sorry, I couldn't do that kind of beat.
It's okay. I got you.
But,
I'll fix it,
you know,
in post.
I have to respect that she at least made that effort. I think that she probably can pull off the gimmick.
Yeah.
In a much more sincere way than Tennille Dashwood did when she had to be Emelina. But I just am concerned that it's going to end up being one note, and it's going to be like they brought her back to all this fanfare and pomp and circumstance, and then it's not going to lead anywhere. And then she's going to be another name just sitting catering in the background in 6 months. I know she has a sort of decent friendship with Parker Bordeaux, who's the guy that's everyone being like, oh, he's the next Brock Lesnar, that kid that looks like Brock Lesnar. He's like in his early 20s or something. I know that they're pretty tight, I guess, on social media, it seems.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
So I don't know if that's sort of like a mini package deal kind of thing.
I can definitely understand how this felt like a kick in the nuts for people, considering that they released Samoa Joe and then, of course, the Iconics and so many other names.
And Mickey James. And Chelsea Green.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of women that had proven themselves over and over in wrestling, not just as characters, but as wrestlers.
Bad timing.
I think that was the thing that hurt, was it felt very much like a trade.
Yeah.
Similar to when Pat McAfee came on.
Yeah.
As the commentator.
Pat McAfee?
In SmackDown. Or McAfee, sorry.
Time out.
Yes.
What? Samoa Joe wants to wrestle again. And
yes.
He can't. WWE's not going to clear him because he's not healthy.
No, they're not.
I get that, but just everything as it unfolded seemed very unfortunate.
It's that other guy on Raw, Ed Van Vurk. He's horrible.
Oh, my gosh. That Van Vurk guy is terrible. I'm not going to.
He's horrible.
Gonna,
Pat McAfee is gold.
I will say that, terrible. Too. Angie, I have to admit, McAfee is much better on the announce table than Van Vurk is, or whatever the heck his name is. He's horrible. I can't stand him.
Pat McAfee is a fanboy. He knows. He wants to be there. Ed Van Vurk is just doing this for a job.
Then again, this is the same company that got rid of Mauro Ranallo, so I don't know.
True. But Mauro, because of the pandemic, he couldn't travel, so they paid. So let's get this open already. Let's get it. So, you know, just because you sit in catering doesn't mean you don't get paid. We know that. No, I mean, these fanboys sometimes, they're not doing anything. They're not getting paid. No.
They're
sitting in the back getting paid.
Yeah, it's true.
And 100% true. Alexander Wolf said it the best. You are getting paid. You know, you get released, you're still getting paid.
Yeah.
These people are getting mad that all these wrestlers are getting released. No. WWE is paying them for 90 extra days.
That's correct.
Until it comes up.
Yep.
They're just not getting the heave-ho and... Okay, you're done. We're not gonna help you.
I agree, Mitch. I'm so sick.
They're getting help.
I listen to Brian Alvarez's podcast, and I get so sick and tired of hearing about how they shouldn't have released these guys because WWE has so much money and all this other crap. What I don't understand is why they keep saying that when we do know that they're getting paid for 90 days. Number one. Number two. The other issue I have with that is. Yeah, he may have gotten rid of those guys, but you also understand that there are guys at the corporate office that not only get paid, but they get a lot of things that the wrestlers don't get. They get medical. They get dental. Yes. They get 401ks. They get all those things at the corporate office. So, pal, you can say whatever you want about Vince McMahon having a crap ton of money and he should just keep these people under his belt. It's not how it works in the business. There are guys that are mopping the floor at WWE headquarters that have a better deal when it comes to medical, dental, vision, and 401ks than even the guys that are on the wrestling circuit do. Okay, so let's, you know, I think of the criticism of Vince McMahon being a prick or whatever, I'm sure that there's some truth to that. But as far as the money goes, everybody needs to get off his nuts about, you know, who he releases and who he does it, because that's completely up to him. And it ain't like, God knows, it doesn't make any news. But, you know, for all we know, he hasn't laid anybody off at the Titan Tower or WWE headquarters. Sorry.
Right.
80s. It's just 80s brain. Yeah, it's so just, stupid.
I just get upset. Like, the other thing why they're getting released, I mean, they have nothing for them. Go make yourself again. You see people released all the time come back.
All right.
To WWE.
Let's talk about the one release this week that may not be able to do that, and that is Velveteen Dream.
Right. If I send pictures of my...
Yeah,
to minors.
That's true.
You're not coming back.
Funny is that he never, and you guys probably know, I mean, I know the story, but you guys may know in more detail than I do. He didn't even deny it. He just said that somebody like breached his phone or whatever.
Yeah, so I guess the story that initially went out was that somebody had sent this picture of him without his consent, like went on his phone.
Right.
I think it was the story that was being framed. Just like went on his phone, found this personal picture and distributed it.
Right.
Which, of course, that has happened to some WWE superstars in the past, specifically Seth Rollins and Paige. Where they've had these leaks that they didn't make, but have been made. And, of course, that's in no way okay and no way acceptable, even if they are a public personality.
Yep.
But that's a whole different issue. So that was what his thing was at first.
Yeah.
And then I guess last night, I had read earlier today, last night our time, or early in the morning our time, he had made this very long post on Instagram talking about how like everything that got sent out was fabricated. And they faked everything, all the screenshots and stuff like that, and they kind of curated it as to the story that the people that had sent it out wanted to tell. You know, I'm more of a person that thinks I'd rather apologize to somebody for thinking worse of them than to believe a monster. And you know, it's such a shame because Velveteen Dream's a person that had all the talent in the world. You know, he was able to really make that gimmick, and I thought I really enjoyed him. My family quickly really liked him as far as seeing the whole Velveteen Dream. My dad thought the sort of Prince meets Jimi Hendrix aesthetic was really cool. He was very charismatic. He could cut a promo. He looked good in the ring. That purple Rainmaker elbow drop looked super cool. You know, he had so much going for him. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever know the real 100% story because I was never
involved in it. They kept him. I mean, to WWE's credit, they did keep him. And here's my two issues with that. They did keep him. So there was no evidence to, I guess, at that time to release him, number one. But number two, I think the reason why he got released was because whenever you bring up the name Velveteen Dream, no matter if they're in a meeting, no matter if there's a board meeting and Triple H has to answer for this thing, every time somebody at the board meeting or somebody in the public eye mentions Velveteen Dream, this is going to follow him. And I think, unfortunately, that is something that he's going to have that WWE couldn't have or deal with, right? So ultimately they had to release him because of that. And, you know, at one time, if I'm not mistaken, didn't John Cena say that Velveteen Dream was the future of the business at one time? I could have swore he said that. You know, so
honestly,
go ahead.
If you would have nipped it in the ass in the beginning, say, you know what, either A, you know what, I apologize for all of this and this stuff, you know, just got out of hand and been a man about it, I don't think we'd be talking about this and he'd still be wrestling. But since he's playing it like nonchalant, this is why it's come to this, and it grew and grew and grew until WWE said, you know what, we don't want to be a part of this no more. So,
well, it is, I mean, you know, along with Velveteen Dream being the biggest one, we lost Alexander Wolf as well. I can't remember her name. It was one of the NXT girls. She didn't even debut yet, but they put a lot of investment into her.
Vanessa Bourne.
That's it. Thank you. Vanessa Bourne. A lot of investment into her. We didn't even get to see her.
Hey, red blooded Republican referee.
Oh, Drake Words. Drake Words.
You know, and he's another person, and rightfully so. And even with Velveteen Dream, you know, he was stupid about how he approached stuff. And even if he had for an inkling for a second that these kids were younger, he should have just not talked to him. I don't know the whole story, but you know, he played it really stupid. You play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. Same with Drake Younger, who was huge on the indies, you know.
He's a death match.
Mox and CZW.
Yeah.
You know, he was a legend, and people were so happy for him when he got into the WWE, even if it was just as a referee. Mm-hmm. You know, he had kind of finally made it as far as where his career was going to go, and he was a respected referee until he decided to with his WWE shirt go and do a huge whole thing as to being anti-vax, anti-mask. And it's like, okay, buddy, we get that those are your opinions, but one, with the WWE logo, really? Like, that's dumb.
He was doing those meetings, by the way, just to let you know. The reason why the WWE had an issue with it, number one, he was doing it in NXT garb, first of all. But number two, he was attending those online meetings in the back business property on business hours. You're on business dumb. Time. That, to be quite honest, that was dumb. And I'm not, you know, regardless of how you feel about his opinion, that's something that you don't do at a business. You do that on your own time. Do that at your house. You can wear a nice shirt and tie, whatever you're going to do. If you're going to call in online to the meeting, that is your business as a citizen of as a public citizen of Florida. That's cool, but you don't involve such a high profile business like, say, WWE or whatever into that when they have done, and to be fair to WWE, they've done their best to avoid that. They're not trying to be woke like Coke or Delta or anybody else. They're not doing that. They're not doing that. They're trying to stay as neutral as possible. So for Drake to do that to them, I think was unfair. And I know he has very strong feelings about these things, but he should have done that on his own time. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what really screwed him up. Because, you know, he can have whatever opinion he wants. He can call into any public forum that he wants. He can petition his government however he wants in that state. But just not on company time, dog. You can't do that. And that's why I think, ultimately, he lost his job. So maybe, if we're lucky, we'll see him back in the deathmatch ring, maybe.
I don't think anyone's going to touch him, and here's why.
I think so too. I agree with you.
I don't know if I'd say it's unfortunate, because learning all this kind of stuff about Drake Younger's made me lose a lot of respect for him. But just that level of public disregard, you know, I get that you maybe are in your home in a Zoom call doing all this kind of stuff, but then when he goes to like the town hall meetings and sits in public in the front row, no mask, cheering on these anti-maskers for like as a very, you know, recognizable face of a public company that has made a lot of effort to talk about being very pro-mask, pro-vaccination, and especially with WWE's history of having COVID outbreaks. Like, it's just, it's
on good point.
Just a non-personal level, it's a really bad look.
Yeah, it's a bad look. I agree.
100%. And then on a more personal level, what kind of disrespect do you have for your coworkers that maybe do feel very strongly about wearing masks as far as being on the job goes, that you're going out in public publicly without a mask, publicly condemning people that wear masks? You have people that are immunocompromised on the WWE roster. Look at Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, you know, and
it's just, it's that level of disrespect to me. And as far as we all know, we live in Hawaii and we see a lot of tourists now coming back to our islands that without any masks and kind of just being like, F everything, right? I'm on vacation. That level of disrespect, I feel very personal about.
Sure.
And I would be very upset if I was in that same sort of situation where I saw him on TV preaching all these things and then coming to work and being that way, you know. Sure. I would be very upset, and I don't think it's acceptable. So I'm glad that they fired him. Much in the same way, you know, I'm glad that certain other people, I will disagree with you slightly on the Velveteen Dream thing. Yeah, you know, maybe it'll all come out in 5 years that this is all a hoax. But to put yourself in a situation where somebody can
absolutely
even accuse you
100%
of being inappropriate with minors as a person that works in a school, you know, that mortifies me. He was talking to kids that are like the age I teach, you know, in an overly familiar way.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the lines need to be very, very clear, or else you're going to have problems like this.
Absolutely.
So I have a lot of issues with that. And with you know, the whole Me Too thing that came out last year, not to go too far off topic, but I think it really showed what wrestlers were willing to own their mistakes and step back themselves.
Yeah.
And which ones had to be sort of forced out. You see people like Joey Ryan who kind of had to be forced out versus people like Marty Scurll, who was like, he acknowledged that he messed up. He made a public statement and then he walked away.
Yeah, that's what he did.
You know, so yeah.
His was pretty bad, and to Joey Ryan is still suing, isn't he?
I think he dropped some of the cases, not all. Not sure. I'd have to check on that, but yeah. And then he did that whole charity show, right?
It was
the Four Women's Charity. I was watching that unfold live on Twitter, and I was like, "What's the over under that this whole thing just goes out
goes to
in
hell.
An hour?"
Yeah,
because it's just like you pretend like it's okay, and like, oh, you were upfront that it was Joey Ryan when you just said Joey, and talent thought Janella,
yeah,
because you just said Joey, and then you put like the most unrecognizable render of him, very small on the poster. It's like you knew what you were doing with Scummy. Just say that you're Scummy. Like, I think the thing that bothers me the most is people's unwillingness to take accountability for a lot of this. Like, you know, I get it. A lot of my favorite wrestlers back in the day weren't perfect, but you know, they now in their older age kind of acknowledge it.
Sure. And
just,
you know, it's fun.
And acknowledge it and say, sorry that you're scum.
And that's the thing is that that's why I never liked Joey Ryan, because I thought that the ridiculousness of that stupid, forgive me for saying the dick flip thing, I hated it. I always hated it. I didn't like him. I thought it was, and I understood that was his character.
You called it.
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I thought it was dumb. I didn't like it. I didn't like it when I don't like it when Omega wrestles a 9-year-old or 11-year-old girl. Don't dig that at all. Don't like them, you know, wrestling a freaking blow up doll. Don't dig it. Don't like it. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. So I think maybe now we as wrestling fans, it's okay to be controversial. When you are with your character, it's okay for these things. So yes, maybe behind the scenes, let's be a little more businesslike. In front of the camera, though, you know, that's the whole point of wrestling. The whole point of wrestling is to be maybe everybody should stick to what AEW said they were going to be a year and a half ago when they first started, a more sports-oriented federation. And no one is sticking to that. And that really sucks.
Anthony Ogogo's in there, man.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, listen, before we get out of here, I do want to broach a couple of really quick subjects. Wrestling and wrestling stars have been making the rounds on mainstream television as of late. Vice, of course, Dark Side of the Ring is back. So A&E is also doing a WWE exclusive look at a certain superstars. Let's start with Dark Side of the Ring. We've got, of course, the first two was Dark Side of the Ring was the first part one and part two of the Brian Pillman doc. I thought that was exceptional. Very well done. You guys can give your opinions here in a second. The second one, if I'm not mistaken, was what was it? It was the
Nick Gage.
That was the second one.
No, no. The second one was Brian Pillman because it was a two parter. Right. So it was a two parter. So one and two. Nick was three, and then Collision in Korea was four. So this week Thursday is Ultimate Warrior. Now, we'll get to that in a minute, but I will say that the Brian Pillman doc was done very well. I think that those guys in Canada are doing a great job. I think that was a very fair assessment of Pillman's career and of his life. I really thought that Pillman's wife or widow, she was almost, you could look at her as the victim and the villain of the piece, in the effect of that, you know, Brian wasn't always an upstanding husband. He was, you know, it was very much so he was a cheater. They got into drugs and things like that. The fact that she was willing to reconcile with Brian Pillman Jr., her son, you know, Brian Pillman Jr. said something to the effect of, you know, what am I going to do? Hate my mother for the rest of my life? He said that wasn't his intent. So he's trying to reconcile this relationship. Very well done. So bravo to those guys. I think that the Brian Pillman doc was exceptional. We'll get to the highlights of the other ones, but Angie, you feel very strongly as you wear your Brian Pillman sunglasses. What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. It wasn't too much different information than what I had already known. Brian Pillman is my favorite wrestler of all time. Loose Cannon is like the inspiration for how I just like to live my wrestling life. Sure. So I really enjoyed it. I was very surprised that they were able to get so much of his family to be on board, especially because I know how many problems they had with his widow.
Yes.
I know that relationship was very fraught, and especially right after he had passed, there was a lot of tension between her and his other children.
Right.
Besides,
that's not
them junior.
Right. Right.
So I was pleasantly surprised to see all them. I know that they weren't all in the same place, which is understandable. But it was really cool. I really enjoyed it. I really appreciated how many people in the business contributed to talking about it. I loved that Eric Bischoff still tried to make it seem like he wasn't worked by Pillman.
he was worked by Pillman.
I'm not worked.
I'm not believing that one set, not one bit.
So. No, I laughed so hard. I was just like, he's really just gonna. Just not going to admit it. Just yeah. Okay, let's do it. I mean, you know, not to be callous, but Pillman himself is dead, so he can't really be like he's lying. But you know,
for sure.
And to see somebody who has had such an underrated influence on pro wrestling, you know, to have Stone Cold talk so highly of him, to have JR recount stories, to have so many big names and big to many respected names in the business recount the influence that he has had on them, I thought was really special. And then the last portion of it being dedicated to his son carrying on his legacy. And I remember, because Brian Pillman's been my favorite for quite some time now, I remember finding out that he had the son, Pillman Jr., and sort of reading about him and kind of, and this is going to sound so creepy, but kind of like following him on social media and seeing like, oh, you know, his father was a wrestler. Is he going into the business? Does he have any interest in it? And at first he didn't really, And then as he got older, I think a couple years after he graduated high school, he started being like, I kind of actually am starting to feel that pull towards wrestling. I'm starting to understand the influence that my father had on a lot of these people. And I mean, the more that he works in the ring, the more you see his father in him.
You know what's interesting about that?
I think it's really nice.
Junior, what's interesting is that it didn't talk about in the doc, but Brian Pillman credits a lot of his getting into the business and being supported by David Arquette. So that was kind of a big deal. And now, of course, as you know, most of you that know that watch wrestling, David Arquette, Brian Pillman Jr. is in AEW and he's part of the Varsity Blondes. And cool tag team. I really hope they do something with it. I think that I think Vice was fair to Brian. They didn't paint him in an extra special light. They played it down the middle, and they did a very good job of giving us Brian Pillman. You know, not perfect, because no one ever is. Yeah. And so, but his legacy lives on through his son, and his impact in the business has been, is still felt throughout today. So that was really super cool. Mitch, have you been watching the Vice stuff? Did Brian Pillman hit you as hard, or was there another one that you liked, or what's the deal?
The most interesting one was the Clash in Korea. I mean,
Collision in Korea?
The Collision in Korea. I mean, for Americans to go there in the early 90s with all these things going on between North Korea and America.
And Antonio Inoki being the catalyst of that was nuts.
And they got Inoki for it.
And it was freaking, ironically enough, It was kind of in honor of Ricky Dozan. Holy crap. To find out that Ricky Dozan was killed by the Japanese mafia when they found out that he was Korean, that was nuts. But you know what's funny is that, watching that episode about Collision in Korea, I thought what was fascinating for me was that, and no one ever talks about it, was, everyone got home okay, which was great, right? Which was great. No one was kidnapped and left there. It was really good. But what I found fascinating was that it was the biggest wrestling event in history that no one talks about. That was fascinating. 190,000 people. Whoa, I don't know what happened to him. 190,000 people showed up for the first night. 160,000 to 170,000 people the second night. That was incredible.
I was about to go off on history sort of deal, because my actual college degree, or one of them, is on history. Yeah. My focus is East Asian. So, I mean, it was astonishing, one, that they let Japanese wrestlers in, because Korea hated Japan for trying to colonize them.
Right, they occupied Korea for a long time. They did, yeah.
Yeah, the man that assassinated the Prime Minister of Japan, he was a Korean national, mm-hmm. and this was in the 1800s, around the 1840s, was celebrated as a national hero of Korea for I think it's still celebrated. Anyway, yeah, no. Of course, attendance was mandatory. That is the thing that I think that they did really well to touch upon, is that sort of authoritarian government of North Korea.
Oh, yeah.
And Scott Norton, I think, had my favorite segment in it, where he was talking to his wife, right? And he thought his wife hung up on him. And then the officer comes knocking on his door and is like, you can't talk smack about North Korea. You can't do it, or we will keep you here.
Yeah, we're going to have to detain
you.
You'll
die here.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. And I was so grateful for Scott Norton's commentary on it, because seeing that perspective, Japan, of course, has a different perspective of Korea, but seeing that American perspective and a lot of the people that were sort of more used to different kinds of lifestyles finally really experienced that authoritarianism, I think, was really cool to get their input. And yeah, the Ricky Dozan thing I always found really interesting, because of the fact that it was Yakuza that killed him.
Yeah.
and because partially because he was of Korean heritage, there's a lot of actually there's a decent amount of wrestlers from around that time that were actually ethnically Korean. There were a lot of just I think famous people in general that were ethnically Korean at that time that had hid that heritage. And so I thought it was cool that, you know, the only person, and this is probably the coolest thing you could ever imagine, the only person that popped a crowd for wrestling in North Korea was Inoki.
Right.
Like, what right. a what a trip, right?
Yeah, crazy. That was absolutely crazy. I tell you what, it was very enlightening learning from. I mean, I wish that there was more. I almost wish that there was more information about what had happened. I know you only can do an hour show, but I really thought that Collision in Korea was a very good program. I thought they did a great job on that.
I loved it.
Yeah, I really loved it too. I will say that I was not enamored with the Nick Gage thing. It was really, I don't know. I like, and I, to be fair, I'm not a huge deathmatch guy. You know what I mean? I mean, I liked ECW. I liked ECW because when you're growing up and you're exchanging tapes and you see ECW, and then when they would throw up the X so you couldn't see what was happening, that was cool for me. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's saying censored, you know? And it's like, oh, what am I missing? Holy crap. And then when you get older and then you watch what you've actually missed, you're like, oh, I don't know if I like that so much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Nick is... You know, it's a tough one for me to handle because I don't know if I could sit, and this is me being a wrestling fan, I don't know if I consider him a wrestler per se, you know, in that respect. And I mean, no disrespect to Nick, because that's not my world for sure. But I mean, you know, when I watch a death match between Mick Foley and Terry Funk, you know, there's, you know, those Japanese death matches were fantastic because they were telling a story. I felt like whenever I'd watch those CCW matches, most of them weren't really like giving me a story to tell. They were just being violent for violence, you know, and maybe that's where I kind of get disconnected. So, yeah, for me, that's where I get disconnected a bit. But I will say that what John Moxley said about him was interesting. The most quoted quote of that program was, Vince McMahon would kill to have someone that could connect to an audience like Nick Gage does. I don't know if that's the truth or not, but I mean, this Nick guy does have quite the following. The question is ultimately, would Vince McMahon want a guy like Nick Gage in WWE, and would Vince McMahon want that audience that watches that to watch WWE, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I don't mean to be too critical, but I mean, that's how I saw it. But I mean, it was a fascinating story nonetheless.
I gotta say, I am a little bit on the opposite side of you for no other reason than I am very, very big into deathmatch. I really, really loved a lot of the stuff in CZW. Of course, we were talking about Drake Younger earlier, and right. Of course, John Moxley and Nick Gage. I've been fortunate enough to be able to see Nick Gage wrestle live. When I went to Chicago for All Out Weekend in 2019, I happened to just be lucky enough to have fell into the right crowd of people.
Wow.
To go watch GCW and Black Label Pro's split show, Two Cup Stuff.
Wow.
And the main event was Effie versus Nick Gage. And there's something about how hyped Nick Gage gets to interact with the crowd that is electric. It really is. I was familiar with Nick Gage prior to going, and I'd seen him at StarCast. He had a table set up, and I was like too intimidated to go speak to him.
Sure.
Because I was like, his whole thing is MDK, right?
Right.
Murder, death, kill, all F and J. And I was like, I'm going to say that to him, and it sounds cool to say it to him in my head, but he's going to be like, you're stupid, and he's going to kick my ass.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
right. I was just like, I can't do this.
I kept
glancing over. It was like the first time I had like met a lot of the actual, you know, wrestlers that you see on TV or on the internet and all that. And so I was terrified. I was really like intimidated.
Yeah.
And after watching that, I was like, I shouldn't have been, because he has such a harsh exterior, right? His whole thing is being a deathmatcher, MDK off the day. Mm-hmm. But he genuinely really appreciates a lot of his fans. And sure. Not to talk about somebody that has kind of been a, come out that there have been not so many positive things that he's done. Jimmy Havoc is another example that I've been fortunate enough to meet. Of course, I don't agree with a lot of the things that he's done as far as his personal relationships with people.
Sure.
But I've been very lucky to meet him as a fan, and I was talking to him when he came to wrestle in Hawaii, and I was like, dude, I'm so stoked. You're one of my favorite wrestlers. I love all this deathmatch stuff. I'm so excited that I got to see you wrestle live. I got to see you at All Out when you did the Cracker Barrel match with Darby Allin and Joey Janela. I'm so stoked you won. Like, I really did love Jimmy Havoc so much. And he, for being, you know, the sort of a tough British guy, right, that is always, like, covered in blood, and he had scars all over his body. I, like, hugged him. He allowed me to hug him. Mm-hmm. And I felt his arm, like, the back of his shoulder, and it was just scars. Jeez. Like, you could feel just all the different, like, cuts and scrapes and barbed wire pokes and all that on him. It's a lifestyle, and I think it goes back to another thing that Mox had said in that, and he was talking about his match where they put the pizza cutter in the mouth and all that, and he had said something along the lines of, you know, yeah, it might be 30 people in the crowd chanting for Nick Gage to kill you, right? But that electricity and that amount of passion in a crowd, like, is what he lives for. And you can definitely see that with Nick Gage, is that he might not be able to do all of the technical wrestling. He might not be a technical genius. He might not be a master of the mat, you know.
Sure.
He might not even be able to do all those fancy aerial moves that the kids love these days. But what he does when he goes out there is he does it with heart. Yeah. Like the segment that stood out to me, and I remember this because I remember watching it online when I started really getting more into deathmatch, was his thing in the Tournament of Death, where he literally died for seven minutes.
Because he
bled out too much, you know. Yeah. And I think that's something that a lot of people take for granted. It is easy, and I know, no disrespect to you, because you know I love you, and you know I respect you as a wrestling fan and as a person that has a different sort of perspective than I do. But I always get a little bit sad when people don't like deathmatch, because it's sort of, the storytelling might not be as great as other matches.
Right.
What goes into setting up a match might not be as compelling from a character angle, but getting to see these people absolutely put their bodies on the line. And I get it.
Sure.
Not everyone can be good at wrestling. You gotta take what you can get. And for some people, what they liked and what they grew up watching and what they came to idolize were death matches.
Sure.
You know, some of my favorite wrestlers, Cactus Jack,
right,
Terry Funk, mm-hmm. Jimmy Havoc then, Nick Gage, Jon Moxley, have all been people that were very much into deathmatch, because I think they know that if they were to go on regular wrestling ability, they might not be top of the card, but they're willing to put their bodies on the line to the extent that could really cause them very serious injury.
Right.
And the rush that they get from that, and being able to give the audience that level of performance, I think is what I appreciate. I would totally be a deathmatch wrestler, because I can't jump off turnbuckles to save my life. You know, like Hev would try and teach me, and I'd just be like, I'm clumsy, and I just like fall and break my neck. So I'd have to do deathmatch.
Well, maybe that's, you know, the young, when I was, you know, in my younger days, I was always attracted to that. And I guess I'm getting older, and I feel like maybe I internalize it more, and I feel it myself, like, damn, these guys are really going through, hell. And it's like, you know, I almost feel like you're almost going to hurt. You're going to yourself trying to do this crap. You're going to kill yourself. And I'm, you know, and maybe it's an older perspective because younger, it's like, frick, yeah, just freaking knock him, you know, you take that freaking light bulb and or that fluorescent light bulb and pound it over his head.
Shatter
it right over his head. I guess I'm a little different now because, like I said, I have nothing but respect for all the Japanese death matches. I own freaking DVDs, yeah, and that stuff all over the place, but maybe it's something that I need to experience live. Maybe that may be a different experience altogether. And maybe that's what it is, because you know, there's only so much you can get from a death match on television per se, but I'm sure live, I'm sure that energy is just incredible, is what I'm guessing. So, I mean, you know, I definitely don't disrespect anybody that's a deathmatch wrestler because, once again, I can't do either one, wrestling or deathmatch wrestling. That's not me, all right? No, not even close.
We can totally be backyard deathmatch wrestlers. Let's do it, G-Money. I'll take the bump.
That's fine. That's fair enough. Well, listen, Angie, we lost our friend Mitch. He said his internet went down, but that's okay.
I bullied him off.
I think you bullied him off. I think that was just an excuse. But listen, let's do this again. I definitely want to do this again. Let's do this hopefully right after Hell in a Cell. We'll give a critique of Hell in a Cell. I didn't get into AEW the way I wanted to tonight, but that's okay. We've been on here for an hour and a half. They're working up to their all-in pay-per-view, is it? I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Double or nothing.
That's right. Double or Nothing is coming up, and they're working towards that. And, you know, I do want to get into the state of AEW sometime because I think that there is some potential there, but also there is just some confusion and lack of, like, discipline when it comes to what's going on. And this new move to different networks is kind of interesting to me that now we're going to see them on TBS. They've actually added another show called AEW Rampage, and just like, so, you know, and then the stuff that's on the internet or on YouTube now, but there's a ton of stuff. And hell, we don't even talk about NWA, by the way. I don't think it's like,
or
no
New
one
Japan.
No one ever talks about NWA anymore or New Japan at all. Like, that's never part of the conversation anymore. It's always WWE and AEW, and it kind of just, you know, crowds everything else out of the room. So maybe we can touch on that next time we talk. We'll do Hell in a Cell, and then we'll talk what other wrestling is available. So Angie, you are incredible, my dear. You have you bring so much to the table. I certainly do appreciate it. So Angie, thank you so much for coming. Angie, a human encyclopedia of wrestling knowledge. Utmost respect for her. Sadly, we miss Mitch, but he will be back next time. And of course, we will do this again. I love talking wrestling, and the more I talk about it, the more I get my feelings out, the more I feel better about what's going on in the world of wrestling. So we are out of time, boys and girls. So have a wonderful, wonderful week. We'll see you back here for NWO. It's the Nerd Watch Order of Wrestling. Until then, peace out. Much love, and always watch wrestling. And until next time, we bid you aloha.